I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. We are several weeks into the economic shutdown with stay-at-home orders, and no one knows when it will end. It's tough to maintain any semblance of a normal life when your life has been turned upside down. For some, the financial and familial stresses are overwhelming. Others who live by themselves can feel anxious and depressed. And those who thought they'd be productive with more time on their hands, after all, Shakespeare reportedly wrote King Lear during a pandemic, those ambitious projects have fallen by the wayside. We asked Vail Wright to join us. She is Director of Clinical Research and Quality at the American Psychological Association to talk about boredom and burnout and why it's okay to give yourself a break. And Vail Wright, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what are you doing to take care of yourself?
Honestly, I'm trying to follow my own advice that I've been giving to others, which is to maintain a routine that includes, you know, trying to get enough sleep, making sure I'm eating as healthy as I can, getting some activity, trying to stay virtually connected to my loved ones. And so, you know, some days I'm pretty good at it. Some days I'm pretty excited if I make dinner.
Right. So, again, give yourself a break, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's really unhelpful when we judge ourselves by kind of the standards that we're seeing on social media, where you see all these posts of people kind of setting these unrealistic expectations around productivity and maximizing the use of your free time right now. It can really make us feel bad about ourselves.
I've seen some of those videos, and some of them I think are wonderful. These are people that are making souffles and writing little plays and doing performances for us, which I do appreciate. But it does raise the question about, if I am not doing that, am I just wasting my time, frittering my time away?
Yeah, I agree. I think they're well-intended often. They're used to motivate. They're probably representing that person's way of coping and, you know, connecting to others. Like, if I made a souffle and nobody saw it, did I really do it? But I think it's also important for us to recognize that seeing these posts on social media likely represent only a small percentage of people, because people typically post just the good stuff. Right. Most of us aren't posting pictures of ourselves on the couch in our PJs binge-watching reality TV. So we have to be really more realistic about kind of what people are doing.
You talk about routine, trying to stick to a routine. Why is that important?
Well, it's important because it's a great way for us to maintain our mental health. It motivates us to keep doing the things that we need to do. Just even showering, getting dressed actually has a significant effect on our well-being and how we feel. And it can easy to sort of slide into this place of it doesn't matter anymore. But when you start to get hopeless, that's really a trigger for depression, anxiety, sadness. So maintaining a routine will also set us up to be better positioned when we do start to return more to normal and have to go back to work and be out into the world.
I mean, we are legitimately so concerned and focused on this COVID-19 virus, on our physical health, the state of the economy, of course, under the pandemic. Are you concerned about people's mental health as these stay-at-home orders continue?
Yeah, we are. There isn't a lot of data to draw from in the past. This is a pretty unprecedented situation. We have seen that in previous pandemics, when people have had to socially distance or quarantine over a long period of time, it can have a negative psychological impact on people. So when we do get through this and through the physical and the financial concerns, I do think that we are on the precipice of a pretty significant mental health crisis on the other side.
With things like depression or anxiety and all that comes with that?
Depression, anxiety, possibly agoraphobia, people being afraid to leave their houses, even though it would be safe by that time. And I think for a lot of individuals, particularly our essential workers, healthcare workers on the front lines, people putting themselves at risk every day, I think we see the real potential for grief, for guilt, and for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, let me pick up on that. And there are so many frontline workers, whether they're at the grocery store or they're delivering our mail or they're on the front lines in hospitals or in medical centers. Again, we see just, you know, these inspiring stories of people that are truly putting their life on the line. But nonetheless, for them, the anxiety's got to be just pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, and I think for individuals like healthcare workers, they're trained to just operate under very stressful circumstances. So I think for a lot of them, they're just doing their job and they come home and they go to sleep and they wake up and they go back and do their job. So I think they're probably just coping the best that they can. I think it's the after effects when things slow down and when there's that point of reflection on the choices that have had to made and the amount of loss that they've seen, I think that's when it's going to really hit people in a very significant way.
I'm also thinking about the rest of us, if I can put it that way. I mean, for some people, it's forced togetherness. People are forced to live together pretty much nonstop, 24/7. And for others, it's forced isolation if you live by yourself. Help us understand maybe what to look for, that if someone is having some kind of mental problems or emotional problems, I should put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably right now a lot of us are having some level of emotional problems. Like I said, this is unprecedented, and nobody's ever been trained to go through a pandemic. So I think it's okay for us to not feel okay right now and to just be getting by. And that might mean, again, setting very small goals for yourself, like getting out of bed and getting dressed and taking a shower, probably in the reverse order. But I think you get the idea. What we need to be thinking about is for those who are particularly already prone to anxiety and depression, they're likely to continue to isolate even more. And so those of us who maybe are doing a little bit better need to put it upon ourselves to really be reaching out virtually, texting, phone calling, video conferencing with the loved ones in our life just to check in. It's really all of our jobs right now as a community to be checking in with each other and asking how people are doing and how they're getting by and how they're coping, making sure they have the food and the resources that they need, and then filling those gaps for people if we can. I think people can expect to have good days and bad days, but if you are realizing that it's been a week or 2 weeks and you just are not functioning, you're not able to take care of yourself or do any work, that's when it's absolutely time to seek out some professional help.
And how do you do that? I mean, I guess there's teletherapy. I mean, there are ways that people can reach out to get some kind of emotional support. But how do you do that under a pandemic?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I think you're right. Most mental health and behavioral health providers have moved to a telehealth platform. I know the American Psychological Association has been offering a lot of resources to both providers and patients about how that works. We know from the research that phone sessions and video sessions are as effective as face-to-face. So it is about finding it, right? So it might be contacting your primary care physician to get referrals from him or her. It can be going to your insurance company's website to look at what providers are under your insurance panel. And then there are also websites you can go to locate people in your area. That includes Psychology Today has a very robust locator, as well as websites like the Association for Behavioral and Cognitive Therapies. So there's a variety of different ways that I think you can reach out to somebody and make those connections and get that therapy started.
Let's say that person that you are concerned about is not going to do any of those things. They're not going to seek out therapy under any kind of circumstances as a friend or a family member. What can you say to someone to help them through this tough time?
Well, I think you can say to them, you know, how much you care about them and why it's important to you that they seek out help. I think it's not bad to ask them, you know, what's getting in their way of seeking out help. Is it that they feel embarrassed? Is it that they just truly don't know how to find it? And then how can you help them understand that everybody needs help, especially under a situation as stressful as this, and maybe help them find that person? Maybe go online yourself, find some recommendations, some phone numbers that you think would be good for them to call for providers, and see if you can help them make those small steps to move forward.
I mean, I think the impulse is to say, well, to try to do something, to try to fix it, but this is not in our control.
No, that's true, and I think that is part of one of the things that prevents us from reaching out to others is that we all feel pretty helpless right now. A lot of it is not in our control. And so, you know, we can get to this thinking pattern of what difference does it make if I reach out? There's nothing I can do for them. But it's really just the reaching out that matters. It is just the connecting and asking, how are you doing, without any expectation that you can fix their situation or that they can fix your situation. It's just about maintaining connections, hearing somebody, letting them talk. Can feel very cathartic and very helpful, and particularly now when we're feeling isolated and alone, that connection is critical.
What about boredom? How should we deal with boredom?
Well, I think one way is to reframe it. I think there's probably nothing wrong with boredom. A little bit. We
a little bit of boredom, right?
A little bit of boredom is probably okay. We live pretty chaotic lives, and this is a really unique opportunity to slow down and reflect and ask ourselves some important questions, like what's really important to me now that so much has been stripped away and my way of life has completely changed and some of the things that I've taken for granted are no longer there. It's an amazing opportunity to ask yourself what's really important to me. What are the relationships that matter to me? What is my place in this world? And to be thinking about some of those things. Mm. And then, you know, I think that people those need are to really, probably get creative, too.
Sure, sure. And those are very philosophical and important questions about, in a sense, what is my life about? Who am I?
Right. And when have we ever been forced to have to look at that in quite such a significant way than right now? So I think this is a really hard situation, but if we can look at it less, more as a challenge to be mm-hmm. met, I think that that does allow us the opportunity to see the unique ways in which we can come out on this stronger, both as people, as individuals, as hopefully as a community and a country.
And this is not to minimize anybody's suffering, but I was thinking in preparation for this interview about how human beings, not all of them, but have survived wars and famines and, you know, other just frightening things that are the equivalent of a pandemic. And we do survive, at least a lot of us.
Yeah, absolutely. People are incredibly resilient, and we are adaptive, and we've shown that both as a country, but if you think about in your own life, you've probably done it in certain ways, too. Most of us have had some sort of experience that we thought, how will I ever get through this? And yet somehow we did, and I think we will with this, too. Now, there will be true loss and grief. People have lost loved ones. We've lost rituals and opportunities and things that is okay to grieve. But then we have to also think about, and what can I do to move forward, and how can I think about things in a different way?
And we have just about 30 seconds before we have to say goodbye to you. And I'm just sort of wondering, once we get to the other side, and I assume we will at some point, how to look back on what we've been through.
Yeah, I think, again, for some, they'll just move on and it'll be like it didn't happen. But I really am hoping that for most of us, we use this as an opportunity to reflect, again, to think about what's most important, to let go of maybe some of the material things that aren't as important, and think about how we came together as a community right now and how can we maintain that spirit going forward.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times. Vale Wright, thank you so much for getting our conversation started.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And she's Director of Clinical Research and Quality at the American Psychological Association. Talking with Tiffany Field, Director of the Touch Research Institute, after this very short break, about the importance of touch when living with and caring for others during this pandemic. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Good touch can be life-saving, relaxing the nervous system, boosting the immune system to fight disease, and giving us an overall sense of pleasure, connection, and well-being. The distancing orders under the pandemic have made it impossible to hug or shake hands or even touch elbows with most of the people we know. We give strangers a wide berth when our paths cross on the sidewalk. Physical distancing, staying at least 6 feet apart, after all, can be the key to our health and survival. Even more tragic today are the COVID-19 hospital patients who can't be held or touched by their loved ones when they need that care the most. We asked Tiffany Field to join us. She is a developmental psychologist and director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami School of Medicine. She was on Radio Times last year. And Tiffany Field, nice to have you back with us on the show.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. And to our listeners, to join our conversation, we want to hear from you, Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Tiffany, I begin most of my interviews this way, which is, how are you doing? How are you taking care of yourself?
Well, I'm fine. I just got off a Zoom Tai Chi class, and I have a Zoom yoga class coming up. And so I'm just trying to stay very active. I took a walk this morning. I'll take another walk tonight. So I'm trying to do a lot of exercise, and I'm talking to a lot of press.
I bet you are. Well, you know, I was thinking the last time you were on the show, it was really a show about unwanted touching, you know, in the time of Me Too. Today, we're going to be talking about our need for touch when there is social distancing, which gives us a chance to just talk about why touch, so broadly speaking, and we're talking good touch here, why that is so critical to our health, our survival, our well-being.
Right. Well, what happens when you're being touched, you're being hugged or someone's giving you a back rub, is that your skin is being moved. And what happens under the skin is that the moving of the skin stimulates the pressure receptors under the skin. And that leads to an increase in what's called vagal activity. The vagus is one of the 12 nerves in the brain. And the signal sends to the brain, the touch signal goes to the brain, the whole nervous system slows down. So heart rate slows down, blood pressure slows down, and actually brain waves change in the direction of relaxation. There's more theta waves when we're in that relaxed state. In addition to that, cortisol, which is the culprit stress hormone in our system, is knocked down. And if you knock down cortisol, you can save natural killer cells, which is important, especially now, because natural killer cells kill viral cells as well as bacterial and cancer cells. So there's a very lawful physiological, biochemical, bioelectrical kind of response that occurs that really helps our immune system and helps keep us healthy.
I know you have done research over the years looking at children who have been deprived of touch. I think children in orphanages in Romania, we know about failure to thrive, that when children don't get that nurturing touch, it's really makes it hard for them to develop in all sorts of ways.
Right. The children in Romania are typically half their expected height, and they have many, many disturbed behaviors. They don't develop cognitively and motorically, and that's largely because they're touch deprived. Fortunately, we don't have many examples of that in our society,
right.
Because it is pretty devastating.
Absolutely. But I'm thinking about, let's say, older people who may be by themselves. And again, since we're talking during this pandemic, whether they might feel a sense of touch deprivation.
Right. I'm sure that anyone alone, and especially older people who are alone, would feel very devastated by the COVID-19. I think, though, that as long as they stay active, as long as they're walking around, as long as they can do any form of exercise, that's going to move the skin. We know, for example, yoga has very similar effects to massage. And so if you stretch a little bit and think about if you just have one leg over the other leg and you're swinging it, you are basically stimulating both your legs. You can brush yourself in the shower. Just washing your hands during this COVID-19 is really a very good form of tactile stimulation. It really does get to the pressure receptors. So I think as long as people are staying active and just moving around, that's going to be very helpful.
I mean, what I hear you saying is just the act of moving moves our skin, and that helps with our immune system.
Yes, yes. Just think, you're walking on the floor of your apartment, and it's stimulating the pressure receptors in your feet. And so any kind of movement is going to be helpful. And I would suggest that if people are at their computer or at the watching TV, that they just keep trying to move their arms or their legs or you know, stretching their back and moving their neck around. That's going to move the skin, and that'll achieve the same kind of. Now, of course, if you don't have someone touching you, that takes away the social and the emotional and the psychological part of it. But the physical part of it can be preserved even if you're alone by self-stimulation and by exercise.
I mean, it's so funny that when we touch ourselves, let's say our shoulders, it feels good. But when someone else does it, it feels even better. Why is that?
It feels even better. And I
Why
think
is that
people who are, yeah, I think couples who are home and families who are home alone are going to be touching a lot more than they normally do. We've been looking at airport gates and what happens in the way of social interaction. And we have been seeing literally no touching, whether it's within families or strangers. And so everyone's on their iPhones or the cell phone, and they're touching their cell phones, but they're not even talking on their cell phones. They're basically scrolling and texting. And so I don't think that this COVID-19, although we have social distancing, right, and we can't touch strangers, I'm hoping that people who are within families are touching each other more than we saw in the airport gates.
Well, and that I assume that was before the pandemic, when people were even were flying and coming in and out of airports. But the idea that even if you're watching TV, like, why not cuddle, right? Why not be on top of each other?
Right, exactly. And I'm hoping that's what's going to happen, that people are going to get a lot more touch than they usually do. And also it's something that, you know, when we have something and take it for granted, and then when it's removed from us, right, we realize how much we miss it.
I remember you telling us last time you were on the show that when you compare Americans to other countries, that we don't touch as much. I think you did some interesting research looking at the French, for instance, compared to Americans. Help us understand that.
Well, I don't know if we really understand it. We compared Parisian adolescents with Miami adolescents in McDonald's restaurants, and we found that the Parisian adolescents were all over each other, hugging each other, arms around each other, rubbing each other's backs. And the Miami adolescents were hugging themselves and flipping their hair and cracking their knuckles. The Parisian adolescents were much less physically and verbally aggressive than the Miami. So, and we know from animal data, and we know from some very primitive culture data, that if you don't get enough physical stimulation, physical affection, you will become aggressive. And there are societies, for example, in New Guinea that live next door to each other, tribes that live next door to each other. And one of them is very physically affectionate to their kids, and they end up being physically affectionate all their lives, whereas the other one is not, and they end up being headhunters. So, yes, we need to be aware that if we don't get enough touch, if we don't get enough that kind of stimulation, we might start being aggressive.
Jane put a comment on our Facebook. Joan on our Facebook page has a question for you. What advice would you give massage therapists now? Can you do that, you know, remotely?
Yes, that's very difficult. Massage therapists are having a really tough time because they're staying at home as well, and they're not considered, unless they're working in hospitals, they're really not considered necessary, you know, people to work. So I feel bad for them. I think they do know how to self-massage, and hopefully they have partners that they can, massage while we're going through this time.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Tiffany Field. She's a developmental psychologist and an authority on touch. She's a director of the Touch Research Institute. That's at the University of Miami School of Medicine. And we are talking about the importance of touch and taking care of ourselves and each other through touch, good touch, obviously, during this period of physical distancing. And again, you can join our conversation, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. You know, I was thinking a month or so ago, we were told, don't touch your face. I mean, that's one way that you could transmit this coronavirus, which made me realize, and I think a lot of us realized, how much we touch our face, like all the time.
Exactly.
Why is that?
And yeah, Well, you know, the itch people say that we have a lot of itching on our faces. Our faces have a very, very large representation in the brain, especially the lips area and the nose. If you've ever seen a homunculus, it's a depiction of how much different body parts are represented in the brain. So any kind of stimulus to the face, you know, whether it's wind, whether it's water, it's going to get to the brain more than other parts of the body. Hmm. And so the slightest itch or the slightest, you know, will cause you to want to, you know, take your hands to your face and get rid of that.
Well, even you saying that makes me want to itch my face.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works. Is it just because it's such a big organ? I mean, a big part of our body.
Yes. It's a big organ, and it's a much more sensitive organ than other parts of our body.
Teresa has a question.
Hands are also that way. There's a lot of representation of the hand on the brain.
Oh, well, explain that.
Well, it's hard to know, but I guess it's because our hands need to engage in fine motor coordination. I mean, think about what they have to do on the keyboard, for example, with a pen in hand. And so they have to be much more developed in terms of their sensation in order for them to be functional in all the ways we use our hands. So if you put a glove on, you'll notice that it's very difficult to be at the keyboard with a glove on, to do any kind of texting with a glove on. And that's because all that sensation that's in your fingers has been significantly reduced by the glove. So that's another hard part about this COVID-19 is wearing gloves and masks, because a mask itches your face and the glove reduces your ability to do things with your fingers and your hands.
Is that why? Is that why it just feels hard to do these things sometimes?
Yes. Yes. I think there are a lot of activities that are more difficult.
Let me read Teresa's question. She says, I live alone with three dogs and a cat, alone in quotations. I'm not a person who gets a lot of human touch in general, but of course, none now. I do, however, pet, hug, cuddle with the dogs. How does touching animals work into this need for touch?
Yes, I think animals are, it's one reason why people with animals live longer. They get a lot of stimulation from their pets. And you know, one of the things we have documented is that the massager gains as much as the massagee. So you as a human are massaging your pets, and you're getting as much benefit from that as they are from being massaged. So a lot of cuddling with pets, and a lot of walking with them, a lot of brushing them and massaging them is really very important for humans as well as the animals.
Absolutely. And Teresa, thanks for that question. I'm also thinking about what really is one of the most heartbreaking parts of this pandemic, which are sick and dying patients. They're in hospitals. They have COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Their loved ones cannot be with them. Sometimes just being able to look through a window or some kind of a partition. What do you suggest people do under these circumstances? What is a substitute for touch?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I hope that those people, I understand that a lot of them are being moved under their stomachs because they can breathe better that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the nursing staff and the physicians are basically moving them a lot, the patients. And hopefully that compensates in some way. But to not have your close relatives there is a very, very sad thing. I don't know what can be done about that. I'm just hoping that the hospital staff is moving them around, to keep them from being deprived. And, you know, they do that to keep them from getting bed sores, for example. So that kind of being moved around is a little bit helpful.
I'm thinking things like eye contact or just a gentle wave or a smile. I mean, there is no substitute for touch, but in terms of this sort of tragic experience, is that helpful, mm-hmm. do you think?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think that with social distancing, we're actually being friendlier to strangers because we just making eye contact makes that signals you know, who's going to walk this way to be 6 or 10 feet away from each other. And then there's a sort of, you know, saying hi and thank you, you know.
Right.
So I think there is a little more face-to-face interaction. It's hard to see the smiles under the mask, but at least making eye contact is a good thing. And hopefully that's going on in the hospital situation as well. I'm sure. I think the nursing, the medical people have been amazing during this period.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's sort of hard to quantify all the work that they've been doing. But I'm thinking of doctors and nurses who are, of course, hopefully suited up with masks and shields. And, mm-hmm. and you know, they look like they're on some kind of lunar surface. But these are the people who
are... I know, I was just going to say they look like they're in outer space.
Yeah, but these are the people that are taking care of these critically ill people. And, you know, it's hard to think about touch under those circumstances.
Yes, and I think they have the additional problem of going home and being worried that they're going to contagiate someone. And so they have to go through all kinds of, you know, getting their clothes off, getting showered, getting, you know, so they can be protecting the people that are around them. And I hope the people around them are giving them back massages, back rubs, or whatever to kind of calm them down and make them less stressed, because it must be a very, I heard one nurse said it's like being at war.
Yeah, absolutely. With this invisible virus. Tiffany, we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Tiffany Field. She's a developmental psychologist, director of the Touch Research Institute. That's at the University of Miami School of Medicine. We're talking about touch and caring for ourselves and others during this period of physical distancing. And again, you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. And we want to know what you're doing to take care of yourself and how you're dealing with this whole touch business. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wain talking with Tiffany Field about human touch, why it's so vital for our physical and emotional well-being. It can boost our immune and nervous systems. It can help us sleep. And we're talking about how to care for ourselves and each other during this time of don't touch, of physical distancing. And again, you can join us, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, and we do welcome your participation in the show. Here's a Facebook question from Peggy. She says, what about the role of touch in creating and making artwork, like working with clay or pastels or knitting? Tiffany?
Yes, those are all very excellent activities. I know that we have a survey out there on COVID-19 activities, and I know a lot of people are responding positively to are you engaging in various hobbies and artistic activities. And I think because of the additional time at home, people have more time to do that, and those are all good because, again, they're all stimulating, they're all touch-like activities.
Right. Here's an email from Mary. She says, I'm an RN. I've been in the room with COVID-19 patients. Prior to leaving the room, I rub both of their shoulders and wish them well. That's lovely.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, nurses have been doing more massage on hospital patients, which I think is a wonderful thing. We used to have massages routinely back in the 40s and 50s in hospitals. It was for, you know, keeping bed sores down, but then it disappeared for a long time. So I'm happy to hear that's happening. That's wonderful.
And maybe time to bring back massage therapists to a hospital setting.
Yes, that would be great. But I think it's also great that the nurses are doing that.
Well, talking about touch, we should talk about sex. I mean, it's hard to disconnect
the two. Before you do that, though, you mentioned sleep. I just wanted to address sleep for a minute. And that is what we found is if you get massaged or you engage in some kind of exercise before you go to bed, you have more deep sleep. And having deep sleep is really important because if you don't get enough deep sleep, substance P with a capital P gets emitted and that causes pain. And so then you get into this whole pain syndrome. And when you have pain, of course, you can't sleep. And so it's sort of a vicious circle. So I'm advising people to do a little stretching exercise, a little walking around their rooms before they go to bed so that they'll have deeper sleep.
What is substance P?
Substance P is, well, it's sort of like a hormone. It causes pain. And if you have a lot of stress and you're not able to sleep, there's going to be more substance P. We measure it in saliva. And when you get more exercise, you get massage before you go to bed at night, there's less substance P and there's less pain.
So even a self-massage or just sort of a way of getting yourself to relax, that can help mitigate
right.
that.
Right. Or when you're walking around watching your late evening show.
Well, we should talk about sex because that's all about touching. Have you looked at that specifically, Tiffany?
No, we haven't looked at that specifically. And it's kind of a crazy thing that people don't get grant monies for that. Way back in time when one of our senators, a esteemed senator from Wisconsin, said, you know, we know enough about sex and about love. We don't need to fund any more studies like that. And so it's been very hard, except for the Kinsey Institute that's been very active studying sex. I think that there will probably be more sex during these times, again, because people are home and you know, they have more time together. And they feel more drawn to each other. So I have somebody jokingly said that we're going to have a bunch of COVID teens in the 30s. In the 2030s, we're going to have COVID teens. So I don't think that sex is going to really suffer from this.
I do want to also, we've been talking largely about what we would call good touch, but I think we also should spend some time talking about, you know, bad touch and the fact that people are, in many cases, isolated at home. There can be domestic violence. There can be, you know, some very worrisome and violent, frankly, behaviors. And I just want to give you a chance to talk about that. And we're going to do a show in more detail about that probably next week. But I just want to make sure that we touch on that while we are having this conversation about touch.
Right. Well, I live in a hotel condo building, and they have opened their doors by law to people who are being domestically abused. And it's a state law in Florida. I don't know if it's law other places, but there's a list of 29 hotels that people can go to if they get into this kind of trouble. And yes, I think it's a very stressful time for people who have psychiatric problems, you know, which are typically sexually abusers or physical abusers are, you know, they have mental health problems. And the stress of being cooped up and, you know, especially when there's a lot of children and the children are very active, that can be very, very troublesome in a, you know, domestic abuse situation. And so I hope those people will take refuge. They have lots of opportunities in this state to do that.
Well, that's good to know. But the idea that the door is open so that someone could look in or perhaps even hear what might be going on. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Tiffany Field, again, director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami School of Medicine. And we're talking about the importance of touch and also the fact that we are physically distancing from people that are not members of our family or sometimes even our family and what to do about that. And again, you can join our conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. So are you doing, the Institute, are you doing specific research related to this pandemic that is forcing so many of us to stay home and stay apart from each other?
Yes, yes. We have an active survey. The link is on Facebook, and the survey takes place on SurveyMonkey. And there are a lot of questions, demographic questions, like are you living alone, or how many children do you have with you? And then there are questions on health. There are questions on the various activities that people are engaging in. There's questions on anxiety, depression, sleep problems, and post-traumatic stress. So it's out there, and hopefully people will respond to it, and hopefully within a week or so we'll have some data to tell people about.
And the idea is just trying to figure out what people are doing, how they're taking care of themselves and each other under these extreme circumstances.
Yes, exactly. And how that relates, for example, the healthful behaviors that they're engaging in, like, for example, exercise, mm-hmm. is that related to less anxiety, less stress, less depression, less sleep problems? So we're looking at the relationships between what people are doing and how they're feeling.
I'm interested, and maybe this is getting ahead of ourselves, about what happens when we get to the other side. And perhaps we won't even know at that point, you know, who is contagious and who isn't. But at least we have enough information that we can begin to get our lives back. Whether you think we will be afraid to touch each other or to come even into close proximity with each other because we might look at each other with some degree of suspicion.
Right. I think those people who are very concerned about the second wave and concerned about being old or having another risk factor may end up wearing masks. And, you know, the Japanese wear those routinely. And so it doesn't have to be a limitation necessarily. I think that they will keep a social distance. The elbow bumping might come back. Mm-hmm. But I doubt that the handshake will come back, and I doubt that the hugging will come back, just because it's you know, makes you too vulnerable. At least until we get through what they're suggesting might be a second wave, I think that our whole touching is going to be different.
And does that make you sad? I mean, this is something that you have studied your whole life.
I know. I've been trying to facilitate touch for my
exactly.
whole career for 40 years. Yeah. Yeah, no, but I saw it decreasing with cell phones. Right. And so I went through my depression about it when the cell phones got to be so prevalent. But yes, I think that this is exacerbating it. And I don't know. I can't predict what's going to happen, but I would guess that we'll have a continuation of social distancing for those people who are doing it. And those people who haven't been doing it will keep staying close to each other. There's a lot of individual variability I see on the streets on my walks.
Absolutely.
Some people are wearing masks. Some people are not wearing masks. Some people are keeping their distance. Some people aren't. Yeah.
What about children? We haven't really spent a lot of time with that, but now we've got children who, of course, are not going to school with their friends. They're home with their families. They may or may not be hooked up getting classes through their schools or through their teacher. But kids like to, you know, rough and tumble play, and kids are so physical. What are your thoughts about what children need?
Yeah, well, I see a lot of little tots on bicycles. I see a lot of families out there trying to get their kids walking or mostly riding bikes. I think that probably parents are very, very resourceful in finding activity for their kids because they know that then the kids will calm down and they won't be so hyperactive. So I think this has been a real challenge for parents to to keep their children active and interested. And yeah, a lot of them are putting arranging Zoom for kids and their friends. And that's fun, you know. It's a novel kind of experience for them. And since they're so computer savvy, they can, you know, be in control of Zoom sessions and invite their friends to join them.
What's so interesting is you were talking about how our devices have, in a sense, kept us apart, and we don't interact or even touch each other the way we used to. But here's Zoom and all these other devices, and that is how we are connecting with each other these days, because that's all we've got.
Yes, that's right. That's
they
right.
Kind of, yeah, it sort
but
of turns everything on its head.
And we have to keep moving around because we do need that tactile stimulation. I'm pacing on my living room floor as I'm talking to you, so I can get my pressure receptors in my feet stimulated. But just holding the phone up to your head does that too, you know?
Right. So, I mean, if there's any kind of takeaway, it's just literally just keep moving, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Help us understand. I know there's been so much more interest and research in this vagus nerve, and it plays such an important role in so many parts of our lives. And you touched on this earlier, but I'd love to just understand more what it does, where it is, how it really influences so much of our immune system, our response system.
Well, the vagus nerve is the largest cranial nerve, and it has pathways that go to the heart, so it slows the heart down. It goes to the face and the voice. So, for example, people who are depressed, they have very little intonation, and they also, in their voice, and they also have limited facial expression. So when you massage them, their vagal activity increases, and so they become much more expressive. The vagus also goes down to the GI tract, so it helps you with digestion. And it also goes to the sex organs, so it's good to have vagal activity, to have good sex. So it's a very, very active, prevalent nerve. It's just everywhere in the body.
But is this a relative, not discovery, but is this a relatively new area of interest for a lot of people?
Well, I think it's there's literature that goes back about 30 years, but it has more people have become interested in it. A colleague of mine, Steve Forges, basically developed the vagal activity model, and you know we look at children to make sure that their vagal activity is elevated because we know then they're going to be more attentive and they're going to be better able to perform their school activities. So it's a marker of, you know, the mental health and the physical health. And, of course, as I mentioned, if the vagal activity goes up, the stress hormones go down, and that saves the immune cells.
Tiffany, we're just about out of time, but Joan wants to know, what's the link to your study? How does someone participate in that?
Oh, if you just go to a Facebook, it's a COVID-19 study, and you'll see it. It comes right up.
So just go to
the study.
Okay. Do you,
just
do you
go
have to go
Facebook, and it gives you the link.
Okay. That's great. Facebook COVID-19 study. Tiffany Field, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Take care.
You too.
Stay well.
And you too. Yeah, absolutely. And she's director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami School of Medicine. And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Diana Martinez, our engineer. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.